going, guys? My name's Chase, and I'm an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men. I'm available to sponsor. This is my home group. My sobriety date is 8/26/24. That's pretty crazy to say, honestly. I was thinking about that. It feels like it's been a long time. So, you know, I'll tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. Pretty normal childhood, you know. Fought with my parents just like every other kid. I'd say, you know, by the time I got to middle school was when I started to feel like the itch of wanting to not feel my emotions, like not feel like a person. So when I was 12, I had my first drink, and it was some Busch Light, and I mixed it with Gatorade because I hated the taste of the Busch Light. And I had a great time. I danced around a fire, and I didn't get in trouble, and woke up the next day and was like, yeah, I want to do that again. So, you know, I would chase that feeling with whatever substance I could get my hands on. And I would, like, drink, but not get, like, blacked out until I was, like, 15. And then I remember I just was like, I'm going to drink until this thing happens that everybody, like, talks about. Like, when they, like, black out. I didn't really know what it was. So I wanted to do it. And so I drank, and I drank, and I blacked out. And I remember coming to in a car wash with my friends, like, spraying me off with a pressure washer because of all the throw up. And then I came to later in a inflatable tube in a backyard with a bunch of towels on me. And the next day, I remember feeling different. I was felt like out of my body for really like the rest of my life. Like I felt like I had like disconnected something in my brain. And it was a weird feeling, and I didn't talk about it. And I just thought that maybe this is how people feel, you know? I don't know. I felt very in tune with my emotions and my actions. It was like I could see my life in a third-person view is kind of how I felt. So, you know, from there, like, shortly after that, I mean, I had, like, the first attempt on my life when I was, like, 16. And from 16 to 19, I'd be, like, in and out of mental hospitals just about every 6 months on the dot. I'd, like, barely graduate high school. I was just looking to get messed up all the time. I didn't care about anything else except for, you know, feeling better, getting drunk, getting high. And, you know, I'm 19, and we get pulled over, and my friend's drunk driving, and he asks the cop what seems to be the problem. And I told him he doesn't know what the problem is. He got his badge in 6 months because I was, like, hated the authorities. And, you know, so then he pulls me out of the car, searches me, finds some stuff on me. I flick a cigarette in his face on accident, and it was an accident. He handcuffed me too soon. And so, you know, I go to jail, and that was like my first consequence, like my first, oh, this is real. And I call mom, and she says, you found your way in, you can find your way out. And I did find my way out. It took me 3 days, but I did find my way out. And then I found my way back in about 2 months later and a violation of probation, and you ain't getting out until you have a court date. And, you know, sitting in there for the little bit that I did, I was like, yeah, I don't want to do this. I'm not built for this. I mean, I was like short hair, chubby. I didn't have any tattoos. I was like, got picked on as soon as I got in there. They like hooted and hollered as soon as I walked in the pod. I was like, and, so, yeah, when I got out, I was like, oh, I'll just sit in my room. You know what I mean? I didn't think about getting sober. You know what I mean? I just thought about making it through probation, getting through this time so I can get back to doing what I want. So the next 9 months, I just sat in my room and played video games, and I got through it. You know, I didn't see my friends at all. I actually had a really close friend of mine who he overdosed while I was on probation, and yeah, I went to his funeral, and that was hard, man. That was hard. And then I wasn't even able to go hang out with my friends afterwards and celebrate my friend's life because I was too scared that I would pick up a drink and that I would and back up in jail. So I just went home and I isolated. Then that was like the start of isolating, right? And I get off probation. You know, I've sworn everything off, right? And the day I get off probation, the day that I call my lawyer, I don't even have the letter in the mail yet. I'm back to doing what I'm doing, right back to it. And at this point, I was living with my grandpa, and I wasn't doing much. I was like mowing yards, making $100 a week. I'm 21 years old, and I'm just, you know, spending $70 at Winghouse because I think I got a shot with the bartender, and then I'm going and buying a nickel bag and then eating $10 worth of McDonald's and rinse and repeat. That's my daily life, right? And it's pretty miserable. And then my grandpa passes away, and I stay in his house, this big mansion, all by myself. And I get this other job doing concrete, and I start making some more money, and I start doing some things that help my drinking go a little longer. And that was that ramped me up, man. That changed my whole trajectory. You know, I would drink until 4 in the morning. And go to do this concrete job at 6 in the morning, hungover, hating myself, 2 hours of like sleep, you know. And by 12 o'clock, get some food in me, and then I would decide, I think I can have a beer this afternoon. And I'd have a beer at 3, and then I'd be at the man's house at 5, and rinse and repeat. And I would just do this, you know, 3 or 4 times a week on a Tuesday was cool with me. And this would just continue to spiral out of control for me. It would be the way that I lived my life. And I'm 24 now, and it's one of those nights. The same thing I've always done. Nothing's really different about it, but I got home and I decided that I ain't going to work tomorrow, and I'm not waking up tomorrow either. And I went to my room, and I swallowed 50 sleeping pills, and I, you know, I didn't want to be alive, but I didn't want to die, because I did that. And I walked over to my roommate's room and I said, "Yo, I messed up." And he said, "Just hit the floor," and I started having a seizure. And you know, the ambulance had to revive me, and I was on a ventilator for a few days. And my parents had to see that, and it was 2 days after my sister's birthday. And the insanity of it all is that I got out of the mental hospital and I did the same thing that brought me there, the same thing that made me feel the way I was feeling. I just went right back to it, because it's the only thing I knew. It was the only thing I knew that would make me not feel, not even feel better anymore. Feel better was done, you know. It just make me not feel a little bit. So I was always really good at, you know, projecting to the world that I've got it all going on for me. I got this good concrete job. My dad bought me a house. I told everybody I bought this house. So they all think I'm like, I've got it made. You know what I mean? And this girl I dated in high school comes back in my life. And I convince her that it's a good idea to have me move out to Colorado with her. And so I do that. I actually was dating somebody, and I like cheated on them. And it was like, "Hey, I'm moving out to Colorado." And they were like, "What the hell?" And like, that's the kind of guy I was. I just didn't care. Like, I'd cheater, liar, my whole life, every relationship I was in, right? And I get out to Colorado, and I think, okay, I'm away from everybody else, you know, because it's their fault that I drink this way. You know, it's not my fault. It's because I'm just trying to keep up with them. So I get out there, and little did I know that Chase was going to be out there with me, you know, and that same guy that I was here in Florida showed up really quick. You know, about 6 months into living out there, I found the people that drank like me and did the things I like to do. And I stopped coming home at night, and I started flying girls out and staying the weekend with them in hotels and not answering my phone. And one time my ex called me, and it was January. It's freezing cold in Denver, right? We know it's going down bad. There's something wrong in the relationship. And, you know, I won't like tell her what's going on, how much I'm drinking and the things I'm doing. And, you know, she calls me and says I'm locked out of the house, and I'm laid up in a hotel room with another girl, and I turn my phone off. I just let her deal with it. You know, she'll figure it out. Like, that's the kind of guy that I was. I didn't care about anybody. This girl that I loved so much that I moved out to Colorado and wanted to be with her and marry her and all these things, right? It was all just talk. Like, my actions said a lot different than the way I treated this person. And, you know, shortly after that, the relationship ended, right? And quickly after that, I actually got into a bad snowboard accident. I couldn't work for 3 months. And my grandpa had left me like 50 grand, right? And couldn't work for 3 months. And I finally got access to this money. And I blew that money in about 6 months. I mean, when I got back to work after this 3 month stint of party every single day, because when I was working concrete, I could clean up for like 2 days a week, you know what I mean? And not smell like liquor when I showed up to the job, just because I had to like show face and I did like what I did. And, you know, but when I got back and I had been on this 3 month run nonstop, do how I do, you know, like Tuesday came and I had to do it. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I have to do it. I have to. There's no like choice in the matter. And, you know, I very shortly lost that job after that happened. I had been doing it for 6 years, this concrete thing, and I loved it. And it was like this career I was going to have. And I was surprisingly, even the way I was like moving up the ladder. They just really liked me. I was a good talker. And, you know, I was a foreman on a job, and I didn't show up to the job for the first 2 days. The first job they gave me as a foreman, and I just didn't show up. And I called them. I said, hey, I'm a drug addict and alcoholic, and I can't work for you guys. And they were like, well, can we get you some help? I was like, nah, I'm gonna figure this out, you know. And that was 4 years ago, so tell me if I figured it out then. And I actually drove to an NA meeting that, like, next day. I drove around the parking lot, and I was like, in my car, and I'm like, that's not that bad. I got my car, you know, I can get another job. It'll be all right. And I didn't tell my mom that I had lost my job and stuff, and that all the money was gone, and that I was struggling. And then I was driving a DoorDash to kind of make ends meet until I could find this new job. And I was drunk driving in the snow, and I had a car full of people, and I was like drifting around a corner and clean. It was clean, right? And then the next one came, and I was like, well, that one was clean. Let's go a little faster this time, right? Let's, you know, spice it up. And I went a little faster, and it wasn't clean this time. And I, you know, hit the curb, wrecked the whole side of my car. The wheels are bent like this, right? And I just drive it home. Like, it'll be fine. I'll go to sleep. It'll be fine when I wake up. I had some friends from Florida that were there to go skiing. Like, they spent all this money to come skiing with me that weekend, and I'm just like, how can I party as hard as I want? They spent thousands of dollars to come ski when it's in my backyard, and I just want to drink and do drugs the whole time. I don't care about the skiing. I don't care about what they want to do. I just want to know, how can we do what I want to do, right? And, you know, we get up in the morning, and we get in the car, and the car is driving, like, sideways. Like, I don't think we're going to the mountains, guys. And, you know, then I had to call my mom. I had to call her and be like, hey, I wrecked the car. I lost my job. I am not doing good right now. And, you know, she tried to get me some help. But, you know, I would, like, beg to go to rehab and stuff. And I don't know. My mom just called my bluff that it'd be a waste of money because I wasn't ready. She was right. I can tell you right now, I would have done the 30, 60-day stint and came back out and done the same thing I had done for years. Picked right back where I left off and thought that it would be different and I could control it and I could not do it on Tuesdays and only do it on the weekend. And it was never the case. And so after that happened, and she, you know, mom bails me out once again. She fixes the car. She flies out there, you know, helps me find a job. I get this job hanging shades, and I would do really good at, man, showing up for the first 2 weeks. You think I'm the star employee. I'm the best thing that's ever happened to your company. You are lucky to have me. And, you know, week three, I'm there 4 days a week. And, week four. Now I'm there 4 days a week, and two of them I haven't slept, and I smell like liquor, and I probably got something in my pocket. And then it would just like increasingly happen like this, where I would, then I'm working 3 days a week, and I'm like falling off of ladders and spraining my ankle, but I didn't, and I just needed to get off for that day because I didn't want to work, and just being insane with the way I lived, it was like insane. Oh my God. And then these jobs hanging shades, they'd last like 6 months, and then they'd just find out who I was, They'd find out the real Chase. The show had been caught, the mask was off, and that would go on, every 6 months doing the same thing, right? And then I called my mom one night, and I texted my sister, and I was like, I'm done. And, from like the previous story of like the I'm done, scared my sister a lot. And so the next day, like 6-8 hours later, my mom's knocking on my door. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't mean it like that. I was just being dramatic, and she's knocking on my door. Cause I called my sister because I was like, man, my knees and my feet are turning purple every time I'm doing this stuff. And I thought that maybe I have a heart condition, and maybe it's not related to my drinking, right? It's just something like hereditary. And so I go to the doctor, right? Because that's going to fix my problems. They're going to give me something. I'm going to be all right. And it's the first time I got honest with the doctor. They were like, so why are you in here? I was like, feet and knees are turning purple whenever I'm like drinking and doing stuff. And she's like, well, how much are you doing? And I get honest. I ask my mom to leave the room. And I told her how much I was doing, and she was like, whoa, hey, you should go to rehab. And I was like, well, I can't do that. And she's like, well, you should at least go see this this drug psychiatrist that I have recommended for you. So I went to go see her, and she gave me some muscle relaxers to help me get off this other stuff, and I just abused those. And, a few weeks into this, she's like, why don't you just try AA, right? Why don't you just try AA? And I'd never even considered it. I always like considered rehab, but I didn't know that there was work after rehab. I thought you did your 30, 60, and then you're like good, right? I didn't know you have to like come to meetings and participate and do that stuff. So I didn't know I was signing up for it, but it's a Friday night, and I didn't want to drink, and I wanted to stay sober, so I went to this meeting. And it was a meeting really similar to this. It was a young person's meeting. Walked in, there's a bunch of young people. It was right next to a college, right next to DU. Bunch of young people laughing, talking. And when I walked in the door, they handed me a raffle ticket, and I thought that was really weird. And so I go and I sit down. I actually sat in like the third row, props to me. I didn't sit in the back. I was like, I'm here, man. I'm an alcoholic, dude. And I sit there, and they give a lead. Then they start calling out the raffle numbers for the people who's going to speak next. It wasn't like raise your hand. It was like you got picked out of this bucket. And they picked me. And I was like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And the lead was about God. I remember that much. And I remember saying some probably shit that I thought was like super like, well, I'm so cool, man. They like get me. It was probably super dumb, but, I did tell him, I was like, this is my first alcoholics meeting. I'm an alcoholic. I really don't know what I'm doing here. And afterwards, like 5 dudes walk up to me. This guy sitting right next to me, like, gets my phone number. What are you doing tomorrow? Let me come pick you up for a meeting. All these other guys get my phone number, right? And they, like, throw me right in. They're just doing, like, what happens here at this group. Like, just grabbing you and just being like, I know you don't know that you're supposed to be here in this boat, but here you are. You're in this boat, and you're going to be okay, right? And I just wasn't honest. Like, I was in Denver, and I was like, well, like, we're sober, but we still smoke, right? Like, we're in Denver. And, so that's what I was doing, like right before a meeting and stuff. And they're like, man, you sure it's not like hard for you to stop smoking? And I'm like, it doesn't bother me, not at all. Don't care for this stuff. And so I'm going to these meetings with these guys. I'm fellowshipping with them every day. They're taking me to meetings every single day. I got a sponsor. I think I opened the big book with him, and he had me highlight the word our and we. throughout like the first couple pages, and I'm just like, this is weird. Then he told me don't have sex for 6 months, and I was like, yeah, I'm not with this. This is not cool. And you know, I wasn't even sober. Like I said, I was smoking, and I think about 20, 30 days into it, I was like, well, I'm going to drink some wine because, like, it's just wine, right? And I ended up drinking, like, 3 or 4 bottles, you know? Couldn't even just do 1 bottle of wine with my friends. I just drank everybody's wine. I think I did some ketamine, too, because I thought that was, like, well, it's not Coke, so, you know, right? Props to me. And I'm going back to Florida for Christmas, and everybody that I'm friends with now in AA has told me that is a horrible idea. They're like, you are going to relapse. I'm like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. And I am on the plane, and I have it ordered for when I get there. And I get off the plane, and I start drinking. And God, it upset my mom so much. It upset her a lot. She'd said before that, that like probably a year before that, I came into town to spend some time with her and worry about how much I can drink, like I always do. And she said, I woke up in the morning and I was angry. And she said, as soon as I grabbed a beer, before I even cracked it open, my whole demeanor changed. And that's when she knew that there was something wrong here. And I didn't notice that. I didn't notice that I was in a bad mood when I woke up. And when I had that Mick Ultra in my hand, I was a happy person again. And, you know, so I come back, right, and she thinks I've been sober, you know, 40, 50 days. And I'm, like, drinking. And she's like, are you sure this is a good idea? I'm like, I'm just drinking. I'm not going to do the other stuff. And, you know, I go to dinner with an ex-girlfriend, and, you know, 8 martinis later, I'm doing other stuff. And I get back to Denver, and this is the worst 8 months of my life. It went deeper and darker than I ever thought it would go. I tried to sleep with every one of my friend's girlfriends. Every time they got in a fight, I was that guy. It was like, oh my God, turned such an asshole. Like, let's go out to drink. Like, that's who I was. That's who I like became, man. I crossed lines I didn't think I would cross. And I sold everything I owned. I started freebasing some stuff and feeling miserable every day, wanting to cease to exist. And all the times I had tried, I knew I just didn't have the balls to do it. So it's like, I guess I'm just going to go on miserable to the bitter end and hope that one day there's something in here that's not supposed to be in there and then I don't wake up. And that was like how I would live. I'd wake up every day and the first words would be like, man, like, here we go again. I got to do this again. I got to fight this thing until 12 o'clock and then, you know, fall victim to it again, do it again. So towards the end, I was working as a barback, and this is when I noticed that my alcoholism had really gotten pretty bad. I always had like classified myself as a drug addict, right? Alcohol was never the problem. And I was working this barback job, so I don't have to be at work till 5. And, you know, promptly I get up at 4 p.m., 1 hour before my shift. And I would go into work and my hand would be shaking like a leaf. And I thought I was like hungry or dehydrated, right? And, you know, 2-3 shots of tequila later, I'd be like calm and not think about how my hand was shaking anymore. And that would be pretty close to the end of my drinking, right? So I get caught by my friend doing some stuff, and he's like, you should move back to Florida. So I do. And I drive to Florida August 27th or 25th is when I start my drive, and I'm not sober. 26th, I am sober. And the first night on the road, man, I got to the hotel, and I remember I just broke, man. I just saw everything that I had done in my life, and I sobbed for like hours in this hotel room alone and just crying, man, and just kind of knew it was it, right? And so I get back to Florida, and my mom makes me go to AA. and I go to this meeting at 3333 at 5:45, and there's like eight people, and I'm like, this is so lame. And these two guys, they walk up to me, and they just grab me, man. Just like what happened in Denver, these two guys just come and grab me. And they bring me here to YPG. And then I meet my sponsor that night. And I don't know I meet him because I'm shopping around, and he tells me, just call me tomorrow. And so I call him tomorrow, and I say, hey, will you be my sponsor? He says, yeah, you're willing to do anything to stay sober. I said, yes, I am. And I couldn't tell you what was like really different this time, why I just said yes to everything this guy asked me to do. I just said, okay. He said to do it, and I said, all right. And I was working a serving job and knew I wasn't going to stay sober. And I told him that, and he's like, get you a job as a plumber and you'll make 15 bucks an hour. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. You know, I will do it. And like, you know, the job has blossomed into the best career I've ever had. Right. But you know, I'm 60 days sober. And I'm like, man, this, I don't know if this is working. I'm not making any friends. Like, nobody's talking to me. He's like, well, are you talking to anybody? I'm like, not really, you know. First one to leave the meeting, last one to get there situation. And he said, why don't you talk to people? So I started doing it. I started talking to people. I started, like, getting out of myself and being a little uncomfortable with walking up to a group of people that are laughing and, like, I'm joining this conversation, and I don't care if they want me here or not. And, like, just started like that. And then, you know, I'm getting on my 90 days. I'm getting close to it, and I meet this guy at a meeting, SOP, and I just like his share. And I walk up, and I said, hey, man, I like your share, blah, blah, blah. And he asked me what I'm doing. I said, I'm trying to save up money to get into a sober living. And Jerry was standing next to him, and it's Terry. And he's like, oh, really, you are? And Terry's like, oh, well, I got a room for rent, and he's like, why don't you talk to your sponsor? Why don't you come to YPG on Thursday? And I came up here on Thursday and spoke about sponsorship, and I told you how cool sponsors were and that they were awesome, and that you should get one, right? Some of you might remember that. And, you know, but, like, man, this guy that I walked up to and never spoke to, right? I walked up to him, told him that I liked his share. And he opened his home to me. And when I moved into this home, my life changed. I don't know if I would have stayed sober if I didn't move into that home and be thrown into the middle of the boat with these people, right? And I'm working the steps with my sponsor, right? And I do my fourth step, and I get some relief from it. And I continue doing what he asked me to do, going to a lot of meetings, calling guys, I'm doing a detox meeting, I'm just saying yes to whatever gets asked of me, even when I don't really want to do it, right? I get to my ninth step, I get to make an amends to my grandma. My uncle had taken his life years ago, and I never spoke about it because I was angry at him, and, you know, I got to make an amends to my grandma about not calling her when her son took his life, and now I get to show up for her and talk about my uncle and enjoy his memory instead of acting like he wasn't a person. And then, you know, a big thing when I was about 9 months sober, you know, I've been living with these people at this house, and my life is good, man. And one of my best friends from high school was trying to get sober, and he overdosed and he died. And I remember getting the news, and I was kind of in shock, not a lot of emotion, to be honest with you. And I get on the highway to go back to Ocala, where I'm from, to go to this guy's funeral, and I just start crying, man. I can't hold back the tears, and it wasn't so much as tears for the loss of my friend, it was tears for the gratitude of being alive and being with these people that loved me, man. I called Terry and I told him that I loved him. And I called my buddy James. I told him I loved him, and I'm so grateful for these guys and grateful for all these people that I know in here and that, like, love me. It was a very intense moment for me, right? And you know, I still go through stuff, right? Like, my life's not perfect. I'm definitely not good at AA sometimes, probably not right now, you know? And you just keep doing the thing, man. You just like listen to the advice and like take it or leave it. But if you don't take it, you know, you might drink. A lot of people with a lot of experience have been through things you've been through, and they're not telling it to you because you like they want to control your life. They want to save your life, man. They want to keep you from that pain and going down the same thing that they went through. You know what I mean? I read this. I've got two sponsees, right, and they're pretty close together. So we recently read the same part in We Agnostics, and that last couple of paragraphs when it speaks about that spiritual experience that that man had when he got on his knees and he felt the overwhelming presence of God. I remember I felt that when I first got sober. I asked my sponsor how I can get closer to this God thing that I hear everybody talking about. He told me, get on my knees and say, God, help me, help me, help me. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I did that, and I had the same experience that book talks about. And I read that with my sponsees, and it fills me with emotion because I am so grateful to have experienced what I've experienced in this program. And I've been through things as a sober guy now that, you know, year and a half ago, it would have been my ticket to drink, right? And now it's not. Now it's my ticket to not drink and to stay sober through it. And hopefully another man raises his hand in an open meeting and speaks about that or tells it to his sponsor, and his sponsor says, hey, I know a guy who went through something pretty similar to that, and that they could call me and that I can help them stay sober because I stayed sober because I talked to guys that helped me stay sober through it. And it's like this crazy perpetual, like, you know, the snake eating the world thing. Like that's what happens here at AA, is just like, you know, they help us, we help them, we help other people, those people help us. It's like, it's absolutely insane what goes on here. And I'm just a grateful man now, you know. I'm a grateful man. Even when I don't want to be grateful, I have to remember to be grateful. And that's what I've got for you. Thank you.